You've heard our open themes with listeners talking about their vocations.
Missouri dairy farmers, love issues, etc.
And what they're doing while listening to issues, etc.
This is Mark from Michigan, and I am a lawnmower listener. We love issues, etc.
We're looking for more of these elements to include in our open themes. Tell us about your vocation, hobby, or what you do while listening to Issues Etc. Call the Issues Etc. comment line 24/7 at 618-223-8382. If you make a mistake, just start over. 618-223-8382. Thanks for listening, and thanks for contributing to Issues Etc. 618-223-8382.
Provinces that have shrunk in size and in prominence are the ones who have gone the way of the culture. And so the Church of England just has to look at its empty pews Sunday after Sunday to recognize the clock is ticking.
We're not about defending every Christian's moral behavior in the history of the church. The fact is the church has been full of 100% sinners from the beginning.
So Thanksgiving arises out of that recognition that faith sees behind the daily bread, the will of God for us, which is only possible because Christ died for us.
Homeschooling moms with piano beginners practicing in the house, love issues, etc.
It's hardly news that Catholics pray the rosary. That's, for many Catholics, a daily or many times a daily event. But what if they're on the border, a Polish border, in mass praying the rosary? Then it might be news. But if you're going to cover it, you probably should cover more than just the fact that they were there with their rosaries. Maybe it would help if you would listen to what they're praying, actually listen to what they're saying and why they're there. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc., coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking about media coverage of a rosary prayer event held on the border of Poland. Terry Mattingly of Get Religion will be our guest for the first half hour or so. A little bit later, Pastor Ted Giese joins us to review the movie Blade Runner 2049. The first one has become a cult classic. The second one, it deals with some of the same issues of what it means to be human. That's pretty timely nowadays, isn't it? Then Pastor Chris Roseborough will be with us for This Week in Pop American Christianity. He's going to bring us some examples of botching the story of David and Goliath. Then we're going to play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week, a simple game we like to play with our listeners at the end of our broadcast week. We have four sound bites to play for you. And once we've played them for you, you can give us a call, send us an email, send us a tweet, or go to our Facebook fan page, and you'll vote for Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week and pick which one will get that esteemed title. That's coming up in the last half hour of Issues Etc. Joining us to talk about media coverage of a rosary prayer event in Poland, Terry Mattingly, a regular guest, senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
I wonder, kind of a way of framing our discussion of this story out of Poland, do you think that our visual-oriented media, television, the internet, things like that, have made journalists overly sensitive to the picture they see, to what they see, and less sensitive to what they're hearing when they go to report on a story?
Well, I think that's just an obvious assumption. I mean, stop and think about it. If put yourself in the position of being a photo editor or a managing editor in charge of the Sunday edition of the newspaper linked to Easter. And you have your choice of a Southern Baptist event, you know, with everyone basically wearing, gray wool blend suits, you know, with rather uniform ties, pretty much looking like a collection of business people. I mean, at most, you would have megachurch land where they might be wearing some sort of brightly colored Hawaiian shirt that makes them look sort of like a tourist, you know, in front of the praise band. But they're regular, normal-looking Americans. Your contrast for that would be to shoot some kind of event involving Roman Catholic or Eastern Orthodox or maybe even Anglican clergy who are wearing brightly colored vestments. You have all kinds of flowers and imagery all over the altar, and you have processions, and you have incense, and you have all kinds of things. Which of those two makes the better photo?
Well, you're going to go with the one that's got the brightest colors and the probably one that are going to catch the eye like that.
Yeah, you're going to go for the compelling visual image, you know, over the gray wool blend suits. Now, I've made a case many times that if you were looking for a logical explanation of why the Episcopal Church gets so many photo ops and gets so much coverage under this sort of circumstance, you could basically make a case that Episcopalians are people who look like Catholics but act like journalists. I mean, in the sense of the proclamations of their church. And plus, some of those brightly colored vestments are going to be worn by women, you know, which is always better than it just being men, and from a newspaper perspective. And some of them might even be, you know, famous local or national level gay rights activists or something. In other words, here now you have a visual buffet that also includes causes that you identify with. Or something. Long time ago, back in the Denver days, I was assigning exactly such a photograph, and you know, and I looked in the banks of pages from the past. This was pre-internet, so I couldn't just look it up on the internet. But I looked at a whole bunch of clips and saw that basically, year after year after year, we had assigned Easter feature photography at the large Roman Catholic churches in town. Basically assuming that that's the only place you had visual imagery. Well, that year, just to be different, I put in a request for them to shoot photographs at a predominantly African-American, yet highly Anglo-Catholic liturgical church over in one of the predominantly African-American communities. And you know, because I figured, well, they're going to get the kind of Easter look they want, but this is a church that probably has never been featured in our newspaper because we don't think of African-American churches, you know, in high, intense liturgical traditions. When the photo had been shot, I got a call from the priest there, and he called me up and said, I just wanted to call and thank you for having them come take the photo. And I said, why? And he said, this is the first time in my entire ministry I have been photographed doing anything other than being a part of a protest march or something.
Hmm.
Now, so once again, we have certain visual images in our mind that automatically we think of as newsworthy. So a black priest immediately is associated with protest marches, civil rights, activism, etc., because that's what black clergy spend all of their time doing, right? Whereas taking a photograph of him in a very intensely Christian liturgical setting, the kind of thing we would normally just send somebody down to the Catholic Cathedral to shoot, he thought it was interesting that the newspaper came to get a photograph of him being a priest in that sense. So anyway, my point is, we lean on visual images, and that's why even though most American nuns today, especially nuns on the theological or political left, have long since kind of donned gray pantsuits, you know, as their normal ecclesiastical attire, as one particular witty person who will be speaking at an Issues Etc. conference soon, once described as sister stretch pants for that look. This particular male journalist coined that phrase. Whenever you see a story about nuns, even if they are liberal nuns who are in trouble with the church, you will always see what photo?
You're probably going to see them in some kind of habit.
Right. You're going to see them wearing some sort of traditional garb that yells, the following people are nuns. Just like in so many movies, if you're ever going to have a nun walk off a plane and just happen to be there at the in the right place to be able to talk to a troubled child, it's never going to be someone in a gray pantsuit with a short cropped haircut and maybe a cross around her neck. It's always going to be a nun in a full habit, because one looks like a nun and the other doesn't. And if you have images from a pro-life rally, even if 90% of the people at this rally are evangelical Protestants or young Catholics carrying banners or whatever, when the photo goes in the newspaper, the odds are 10 to 1 that one of the feature photos will be of a pair of hands holding a rosary, right? Because that's what Catholics do at protests or marches or anything. You can take that photo and go out and then have lunch on your way back to the newsroom and know that you got a photo that looks religious. You got something that looks Catholic. Here's a pair of hands holding a rosary, job done. So yeah, I'm affirming you here, but it's a really complex thing trying to get religion into photographs. And let's just say the cliches are cliches for a reason.
If there were a photo op for that kind of thing, it certainly had to be this story out of Poland, where Roman Catholics gathered near a border in order to pray the rosary. What were they there for? And you actually looked at, I think, both the New York Times and the BBC's coverage of this.
Yeah, this was a very interesting event, because Poland, in the context of Europe right now, Poland is a really interesting country. It's kind of getting some attention right now because there is quite a bit of nationalistic fervor, which has some troubling elements, to say the least, in Poland. But at the same time, the intensely Catholic culture of Poland also kind of puts it out of step with a lot of the European Union, maybe a little bit more along Brexit lines over in England. They're not comfortable with some of the trends in mainstream Europe. And in this particular event, organized by Polish laypeople, you had hundreds of thousands of people, perhaps millions, all decided to head to the border of Poland, the 2,000-mile border of Poland, and pray the rosary together. And the whole day was supposed to be a day of prayers for Poland and prayers for the future of Europe and the world. Now, that's what it was announced to be about, and the rosary was the symbol of this, but the rosary is also then connected with several important events in the history of Poland, including a major victory that prevented Islam from sweeping into the heart of Europe. And people were very quick to point out, I believe that's pronounced Lepanto, the Battle of Lepanto in 1571, in a battle with the Ottoman Empire. And the way the history of this event is described, people prayed the rosary to pray for the protection of their country. So the minute you add that wrinkle to it, in the current context of European debates, you can probably guess which issue leapt to the forefront in terms of how the media portrayed this this particular liturgical event.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of a rosary prayer event in Poland. When we come back, how did the two biggest newsrooms in the world, the New York Times and the BBC, cover it?
Religious liberty is an issue I think that we as Christians need to get out in front of.
Mark Hemingway talking about his joint presentation at the 2017 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
Whether it's willful or simple ignorance, the media have badly misrepresented this issue. It is also vital that all Americans understand just how foundational religious liberty and freedom of conscience are to the preservation of all American freedoms. And this is something that even those Americans who aren't religious should understand and agree with. I also happen to believe that we as Lutherans, with our understanding of Two Kingdoms theology, are in an excellent position to be the explainers and ambassadors of this issue.
You can meet and hear Mark and Molly Hemingway making the case for religious liberty at the Fall Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 10th and Saturday, November 11th in Houston, Texas. Registration is $120. Child care is free. Find out more and register at issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues Etc.
When pastors talk about us, they call us ad crucem. When laity mention us, they speak of ad crucem. When non-Lutherans address us, they say ADC Rucam. But no matter how you say it, Ad Crucem is the place to go for greeting cards, artwork, jewelry, ornaments, housewares, church certificates, church banners, and all your gift-buying needs. Visit adcrucem.com, confessing the faith through art and word. ADCRUCEM.com.
There are nearly 20 million college students in the United States. 40% will stop going to church during college. 50% will never return. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is seeking to meet this challenge through LCMSU. Why? Because 100% of college students matter to God and to His church. College is tough. You need Jesus. We'll help. LCMSU. Check us out at lcms.org/LCMSU.
The Lutheran reformers were quite wise in pointing to the fact that the miracles that substantiate the gospel that we believe, teach, and confess are not found in any miraculous workings by Martin Luther, but instead the miracles performed by the apostles in Jesus Christ.
To talk of justification as actually being made righteous is not, in fact, the traditional confessional way Lutherans speak of justification.
The church is Christ's body. It is not going to go away. It's going to triumph. And we might lose some of our privilege or some of the things we've gotten used to and enjoyed. We're about the proclamation of Christ, which will happen just fine, regardless what the state does to it.
One of the best thoughts about what we do in medicine is we're trying to teach others what they ought to do to be healthy. And when you think about ought, that involves moral, ethical, social, relational decisions.
In the last half hour of Issues Etc., we're going to be playing Issues Etc. soundbite of the week. We're going to play those soundbites in their entirety for you. And after you've heard them, you can give us a call, 1-877-623-6943, and vote or send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org. You can vote via Twitter at IssuesETC or vote right now at our Facebook fan page where we've left space for you to vote. Facebook.com/IssuesETC. In the meantime, Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about media coverage of a rosary prayer in Poland. Terry, how did the two biggest newsrooms, the two that you looked at, the New York Times and the BBC, how did they cover this story?
Yeah, I out of all of the coverage of this, I chose two very symbolic newsrooms in that if you're going to have a discussion of the most powerful newsroom in the world, basically Americans might immediately assume the New York Times. But if you've ever checked into a hotel room pretty much anywhere else in the world and turned on the television, you quickly begin to realize the global reach of BBC. And I think you could get into a lively debate which of these two are more powerful. But I was pleasantly surprised with the New York Times coverage, primarily in the way I described it in the post I did for Get Religion. They described this as a religious event with political overtones. And I think that that is an accurate way of describing it, in the sense that with all of the arguments about immigration, with all of the arguments about whether or not the rise of Islam in nations such as Germany and France are kind of placing their European cultures somehow at risk, or at least raising the potential for conflict and acts of terrorism, all of which is extremely opposed in Poland, I think you would have to admit that that political overtone is there. However, really, to my amazement, the New York Times primarily talked to Polish people about why they went to this event. You know, they found out that there were people praying for Europe to remain Europe. Now, that's a loaded phrase. But at the same time, people were praying for their own children in light of a lot of the trends in modern Europe and in broken families and a lot of other painful subjects. So the New York Times portrayed it as a mix of things, but left the religion in it, at least in part. Now, the BBC was much more blunt, and quite frankly, the BBC said this was a political event, largely supported by Polish political leaders, and put a very, you know, typical word in the headline: Poland Catholics hold controversial prayer day on borders. Well, what would make a bunch of Catholics getting together to pray the rosary, what would make that controversial? Well, it would have to be controversial because it's predominantly political. And here it was seen that this day of rosary was a living symbol of refusing to allow Muslim immigrants into their country. Now, was that a message by some of the people involved in this? I think the quotes in the Times piece would suggest that, yes, that's true. But was that the reason Polish lay people put this event together? Was that their primary concern? Some people might even say their heart cry. I would say the story's a lot bigger and more complex than that. So the Times kind of got my nod of appreciation for saying this was a religious event with political overtones. The BBC just went straight for the jugular and basically said, no, this was a political event that was manipulating religion. That's a rather big difference, wouldn't you say?
A very big difference. How do you account for it?
I don't know the difference between the two newsrooms on that. Perhaps the BBC, being closer to Europe, you know, is a little bit more just involved day by day with those immigration issues and with kind of the pulse of what people are worried about in Europe. You might even say BBC has been chided a lot for rather one-sided, divisive coverage of the trends that led to Brexit. So perhaps what we saw here is kind of teeing off on Brexit round two, only this time it happens to be in Poland. It was interesting, but all of which missed one particular point. I always find it poignant that when journalists cover worship services, religious events, whether it's funerals, whether it's massive prayer rallies linked to this kind of event, or even if it's a political leader swinging by to speak at a powerful African-American church, we always seem to assume that the words of the worship service don't carry any newsworthy content that could be featured in the story. So this helps promote the image of here's the hands clutching the rosary. And by the way, what is it with the word clutching with news media when it comes to the rosary? I even this time did a search and tried to find out how often the word rosary is attached to the word clutching. We're in serious need of a new verb to go with this. You talk about a cliche in news writing. Clutching a rosary. When you hear the word clutching in that context, what does it sound like to you?
It sounds like someone's desperate, mourning, sad. There is an emotional thing. There's also kind of something reminiscent of President Obama's famous clinging to their guns and God kind of a thing.
Yes. Yeah, it implies a certain degree of fanaticism, I think, to me. And it certainly sounds like, oh, here is this poor person emotionally dependent on this physical object. You know, this mother clutching her rosary. Now, I ask a lot of Catholics, you know, what are some other verbs we could use? And they all just said the same thing. Holding the rosary isn't bad. That's rather neutral. But that most Catholics would simply say praying the rosary. In other words, the emphasis is on what the person is saying, not just that there are beads going between their fingers as they say these prayers. So I wondered in this case, now the rosary is a big, complex collection of liturgical materials. I mean, you have Hail Marys, you have the Lord's Prayer, you have the Apostles' Creed. That's all pretty standard. I understand that. But then you get into this whole subject of the mysteries of the rosary, with different mysteries for each day. And if you're a journalist, this isn't very hard to learn. At the moment, I'm looking quite literally at Rosary for Dummies, you know, which is a website that does a pretty decent job of explaining the mechanics of this whole thing. But since I knew enough about Catholicism to know something about the Holy Mysteries, I wondered about something else. When you say Poland and you think about the last century or so of Catholic life, it's pretty obvious what name should come out of your memory banks, right? Who's the most famous Polish Catholic?
Well, by his ecclesiastical name, John Paul II.
John Paul II. Karol Wojtyła would certainly be right at the top of any list of Catholic leaders, period. So I found it interesting that Pope John Paul II, of who, of course, now is Saint Pope John Paul II, actually helped create a new set of mysteries for inclusion in the rosary on days in which this would be appropriate. The luminous mysteries reveal the light of Jesus, bring peace to your life. It's an entire set of mysteries of the gospel. And some of them, one of them, for example, is the baptism of Jesus, which of course gives you a river image. And then you have over and over this repetitive image of praying for peace in your life, praying for peace among nations, etc. Now, this struck me. I wonder, I haven't been able to find out yet because it's not included in the news reports, and I don't read Polish, and don't trust Google Translate enough to tell me exactly what the Polish text would say. Would you consider it at least intriguing if these Poles gathered on the borders of their nation and used as the mysteries for that day a set of prayers for peace, including peace for Poland, specifically composed by Pope John Paul II?
Certainly.
That strikes me as just overwhelmingly interesting. In my own post about this, I noted that I have always found it kind of poignant. It's an interesting detail, you know, like how many languages did Pope John Paul II know? And most lists I have seen of languages in which this pope could be considered fluent, most of them have at least 9. And one list linked to a Vatican page lists him as speaking 11 languages. But then I immediately doubted that one because I remember from reading in a biography of the Pope that he grew up on the edge of a Jewish neighborhood and used to play and hang out a lot with children who spoke Yiddish. And I wondered whether the hybrid German-Hebrew language of Yiddish should have been included in his list. But anyway, he spoke Polish, Slovak, Russian, Italian, French, Spanish, Portuguese, German, Ukrainian, English, and knew Latin so well that he could speak it. Well, what in the world does that symbolize? I once asked a Polish priest about this facility the Pope had with languages, and he said, let's put it this way. If you grew up near a border in Poland, you learned a lot of languages because you never knew who was going to be ruling you next.
Terry Mattingly, a senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thanks again.
Glad to be here.
When we come back, we'll do a little review of the movie Blade Runner 2049 with Pastor Ted Giese.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
Smartest listeners in radio. You're listening to Issues Etc.
¿Qué dicen y qué significan las 99 tesis de Martín Lutero? ¿Cuál es la historia del famoso himno Castillo Fuerte? ¿Cómo y por qué están celebrando los luteranos el 50º aniversario de la Reforma este mes? Aprende más en la edición de octubre de The Lutheran Witness. Visite acph.org/trylutheranwitness para recibir 6 ediciones para $6.99. The Lutheran Witness, interpretando a un mundo contemporáneo desde una perspectiva cristiana.